Blog Talk Radio.
OE Dry Bones, it's Monday night, but this time we got a special guest. Before we bring this show about, y'all need to listen to what the ancestors used to say. Tonight we got a wonderful show. Thank you for listening, OE Dry Bones. Before we start, we're gonna do what we normally do: let the callers get in the queue and come in. I do see our special guests, and we have a wonderful special guest, everybody. I will get into that in a few after I go through what we normally go through. It's been a radical weekend. I had so much fun up in St. Petersburg at Movement for Change. Not to be mistaken with Movement Change, which is down here in Fort Lauderdale, but very, very powerful groups, to say the least. And it was a fundraiser for Ms. Irene Olive-Cates, who's running for the school board district in St. Petersburg. And let me tell you, we had a good time up there. But we got work to do, y'all. We got some work to do, and we need to look at this more serious. Last week, I want to thank special guests who came on Wednesday, former Congressman James Traficant. For those of you who don't know who James Traficant is, go to our show, OE Dry Bones, on Blog Talk Radio. Listen, download it. This man wrote something in the Congress in 1993. This gentleman made a speech about what was going on in America. And believe me, it's what we all are talking about right now. Right now, we are all talking about this. If you think I'm making this up, listen to that speech, download it, read it yourself. Everybody should be very aware that this was in the congressional records. I don't know why any of our black leaders have not went back on this, because it is phenomenal what this gentleman said. So we thank him for coming on the show last week, and we thank many others. Again, I do my normal shout out to my brothers and sisters who are out there struggling and surviving with your businesses. Guess what? We got to start patronizing. So we're going to start with People's Choice Mobile Detailing and Pressure Washing up there in St. Petersburg, my brother Tony. If you want to call, just go to People's Choice Mobile Detailing and on Facebook, and he'll be able to come right to you in the area. Also, I want to thank a lot of the brothers and sisters who put together Sister Kate's event. It wasn't easy. That's Sister B from Be Beautiful Hair Salon over there in St. Petersburg and on Martin Luther King Avenue, Martin Luther King Boulevard, excuse me, and beautiful, beautiful. I love her place. It's one of the biggest beauty salons I've seen because the whole house, every room is part of the beauty salon. So if y'all in St. Petersburg, go to Be Beautiful Hair Salon, and you will be pampered like no other. So in saying all that, my shout out for businesses. Remember last week we talked about Obama may be sending troops. Well, guess what? There are more troops. Go to driveonconnection.com. You will get the latest update on what is going on in the political world and in the world itself on an esoterical basis. We need to go in depth and give you the whole foundation, meaning that we'll give you the secrets of what is going on. What is perceived is not always reality, y'all. That's why we're going to build the cobwebs out your mind tonight, because we are having to create our own reality very soon, because certain people are creating theirs, regardless if we go along with it or not. So it's time for us to say enough. It's time for us to create our own reality within this world that we are in. But in saying all that, you know we cannot enter into any of our shows without bringing back the ancestors. And every show, for those of you who have not heard these shows or this is your first time, you go to every show we have, and we have a litany of shows with quality individuals. Let me rephrase that. Dr. Ngimi just called this out of email, and he wants to have everybody go on to the Huffington Post for his article that he wrote. That Dr. Ngimi was on here talking about the Congo is compelling. I think everybody should look at that, because you're going to hear a lot about Africa, way more than you believe, because of what's going on over there with the precious minerals. But we still cannot go without the call of our ancestors, and that is going to be from the seven oracles of Maya. And I'm always going to teach these seven, because unfortunately these are the seven principles that create morality in a righteous society, and that is truth. Without truth, y'all, there's only lies, and a house built on lies cannot stand, and that is what we have. Remember, Dr. King said he was taking us into a burning house. Understand that. Truth. Justice. We are all waiting on justice, because guess what? Justice cannot act when good people watch and let bad people do things. You can't have justice that way. Harmony. That's a key word, y'all. I suggest you go and look up the word harmony, because that is cosmology at its best. Balance. We got to have balance. Male and female principle must be in balance. You know it's not. You just watched the BET Awards. Reciprocity. What comes back? So I don't know why we can't understand what we are shooting out is coming back at us. Order. You have to have order. And I'm not talking about the order out of chaos. I'm talking about just divine order of the universe. And then it's righteousness. These principles are the key to morality. And you all heard me say this. These are the key to any society. Would you rather have that, or would you rather have what we have now? That has been asked. But tonight, we're going to bring in something dear to me. I met the brother, and like I do most people, from a wonderful organization by this one called Movement Change, Movement for Change. And these two sisters and a group of them put together a program in Fort Lauderdale, and it was at a very nice event. We had it at the Dillard Museum, and they had a Mind, Body, and Soul, which is on Sheridan Street in Fort Lauderdale, everybody. So if you're in that area, visit Mind, Body, and Soul. It has all that you need. Yoga, food, and everything. You will be surprised what a little place can do. It was interesting to see the amount of people that showed up for this event called Hidden Colors. 3. And of course, it was just mainly a discussion about the first two hidden colors. But this brother was brought down because he is one of the prime characters in the Hidden Colors. But for those of you who know, he's not just in this era of Hidden Colors. This brother goes way back, man. This brother's been around Dr. Clark, Chancellor Williams, you know, you name it. He's been around, seen him with Amos Wilson. He's on YouTube. So he is not just this new phenomenon. He's been in the trenches for quite a long time. And what caught my eye with this brother, he talked about something that was dear to me, because anybody who know me know that my queen, who had my children, had homeschooled, and she did a magnificent job. And so I must give credit with due, and we did it with quality teachers who stood behind us. And at the time of us doing that, we were doing this in the 80s. People thought we were crazy. The only people homeschooling at that time was hillbillies. That was it. There was nobody in South Florida homeschool. Now, anybody know me, know I'm telling the truth. And the teachers were very reluctant. They thought it was antisocial. They thought, oh, no, your kid's not going to be able to comprehend with other kids. Well, that's false. But in doing so, we also created a curriculum that was also heavily Afrocentric, comedic, esoteric. We taught them all of the astrology. We taught them all of the symbolism so they would know what they would be seeing in their lives. They know quite well what is not real, what is real. In doing so, they had went from homeschooling straight to college, straight to degrees, and some of them just got back from Japan on a trip sponsored by their school. So these are actual events that have taken place in my life that lets me know that homeschooling is a very serious thing, and it's only going to grow. It's only going to grow. And so in doing so, this brother was here, and he spoke about Dr. Kyle Bahiwafa. Kimene spoke about this, and it hit me home. And I want to thank my brothers who came with us, the Temple of Ptah. We came in there hardcore with our brothers in blue, the canopy of heaven, of all friendship and brotherhood, and we extended that brotherhood to the Movement for Change when we came. And I appreciate all you brothers for showing up, because it was not a free event. So we patronize our people. We patronize. That's what we do. We patronize events that are worthy of being patronized. And so in doing so, this brother caught my eye when he said two things. He said, black men need to get in a room and have an ugly cry. And I knew where he was coming from. I said, you know what, that's a toning. But just black men, I know we're going to have black women at the same time. We're going to have a double ugly cry. Because what's going on with the male and female principle, if we don't cry out to our ancestors for forgiveness for what we have done, then the reciprocity that's in the Mayat will not come down. And that is a fact. So rather hear me talk, I'm going to turn over to a brother who's been out there in the trenches for some odd years. And I'm going to tell you, his ponytail is still there. So if y'all didn't know, he, even in the older videos, he had a longer ponytail then. But this brother, I hope to keep in connection with him. I'll bring him in right now. Brother, Dr. Kyle Bahiwafa Kimene, are you with us?
My brother, I am with you all the way. Hotep to you and to all of your audience and to drive home.
Yes, brother. Like I said before, I appreciate you coming on because you didn't have to. But I just want to tell you, I've been watching some of your material for quite some time. You were not new to most of us. We were to others, but not most of us. And we know that you've been doing a great work. But just tell people how long you've been in this journey.
My brother, I've been doing this work for quite a while as it relates to education. From a formal perspective, I was a New York City Board of Education teacher from October of 1979 until July of 2009. I started teaching in Gary, Indiana in September of 1977. I'm from New York, and I was my educational career was centered in South Central Bronx, New York. Prior to that, I was always part of education throughout my career. And so education has always been one of the main focuses that I've attempted to develop throughout my lifetime. Presently, from July of 2009, I was going out on the road since 1986 doing presentations, but as of 2009, I really have been doing consultant work, developing pretty much what I did and had the opportunity and pleasure of doing in South Florida when you had come to the presentation. So I've been doing a lot of that around the country. So that I do consult now.
Well, let me ask you, you've been around some of what we consider some of the best history. Dr. Ben, Chancellor Williams, Dr. Ben Yokeman, Dr. Beshango. You know, when you came upon this type of knowledge, because I know a lot of people have a hard time in deciphering some of these things, what made you so inquisitive into learning this type of information?
Well, for those that know me, prior to my correction of my name, Kaba Hiawatha Kamene, I was Booker Taliaferro Coleman Jr. My father, Sr., was from Tuskegee, attended Tuskegee Institute for a while, and so culture was always in my home. I was always aware of culture. My father belonged to a church, Mother AME Zion, AME standing for African Methodist Episcopal. My father belonged to Mother AME Zion Church in Harlem. And the pastor of the church and the pastor that married my parents was named Reverend Benjamin Robeson, who was the brother of Paul Robeson.
Right.
So culture has always been in my family. Now, my introduction to Africa in a very interesting way came through my Puerto Rican neighbors who practiced Santeria. And I, being from a Roman Catholic background and then going into their home and listening to the music and in my own way as a child participating in the ceremonies of Santeria, I was introduced to Africa from the drums to the language, to the Las Siete Potencias, the Seven Powers. And I was introduced to Africa at a very young age, simply because I hung out with my buddies and their parents were santeros. So I've been exposed from a very young age, and so I never became inquisitive. I was just born in it. Now, come up to about 12 and a half years of age is when the old heads, what we call them old heads, you know, the brothers and sisters a couple years older than us. I might have been like in my 9, 10, 11, and these old heads would take us places. They, you know, their parents knew my parents, and so they brought me up to Harlem one day, and they sat the young people, there was about six of us, sat us in front of this gentleman that was talking, and at the end they brought us up and we were introduced to him, and I'm speaking of Professor John Henry Clark. I was 12 and a half at this time. Basically, you're dealing with probably somewhere in pretty much like around this time in 1966, and I was going into the eighth grade. It was the end of my school was out, and I was waiting to go to daycare. When I was brought up to meet Professor Clark, like all the young people, and I was introduced to him, he said, "Oh, Booker T, you're going to be a great teacher one day." And at that time, of course, I'm 12 and a half. My mind's not necessarily there, but he planted the seed, I think. And I think that these are my experiences. And, of course, Professor Clark had an ongoing relationship with myself. I'm not going to say in the very beginning part of my life I was with him all the time, but as I got older, he became a more central figure in the work that I was doing. And then through associating with Dr. Clark, then be exposed to people like Dr. John G. Jackson and, of course, Dr. Ben and Chancellor Williams. I worked with Chancellor Williams in 84. I've been exposed to Dr. Naeem Akbar and to people such as who really introduced me to melanin, and my melanin curriculum comes out of my working with him. The psychological premise of the curriculum that I develop and that I will be bringing to South Florida that I brought a couple weeks ago and I hope to bring in the early part of August, August 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, comes directly out of my associations with Dr. Amos Wilson. I work with Dr. Amos Wilson as it relates. He assisted me in understanding the psychological dimensions. He was working and finishing up his book, Blueprint for Black Power. He had already written his book on the psychological development of black children and also Awakening the Genius in the Black Child. So these are the brothers and sisters, my intellectual mother, Dr. Sharshi McIntyre, who I give great credit to. I've worked with a wonderful sister, the wife of Dr. Leonard Jeffries, Dr. Rosalind Jeffries. I've been exposed to the work of Dr. Francis Kress Welsing. I've been on panels and, with people such as Dr. Jewel Pookrum. So my background comes from my association with some of the finest minds in the African community in the 20th century, because each and every one of them were impacted by the great minds of the early part of the 20th century, such as people like Richard B. Moore, people like Arturo Schomburg. These were the teachers of my teachers. And I had opportunity to do research on William Lew Hansberry. So I could go on in praise of all those sisters and brothers who preceded me, who are now ancestors, or they may be elders. So I pay great tribute. And one of the great things about being a younger is that in the presence of the elders, I always knew my place. And I think that's why Dr. Clark took to me, because I could be in the room in Dr. Clark's house where John G. Jackson is there, Chancellor Williams is there, and Dr. Ben is there, and they're all talking, and my mouth is shut, and I don't dare ask a question. If I had a question, I would wait until they were gone, and I would address and ask Dr. Clark. I never spoke when the elders spoke. I work with, in fact, brother, down in Fort Lauderdale, Dr. Asa Hilliard, Nana Before, and I worked from about 1988 until about 1994 in the Broward County school system. Dr. Hilliard worked with the administrators, and I worked with the teachers. And so, and again, when I was in the presence of Dr. Hilliard, my mouth was closed. I became a student, and I listened to what that elder, who was now an ancestor, had to say, and I had my notebook out, and I took notes. And again, I think that it was this absolute regard and respect for his eldership and his wisdom that allowed him to feel comfortable enough around me to talk to me and to teach me and to school me, so that I come to the community with my own background and with my experience in the boards of education. And so that's what I'm attempting to do, and I look forward to coming back to Broward County in August, or whenever the community calls me, I will be there.
Well, you know, you said some good names out there, and I remember, I'm getting feedback from somewhere.
I'm getting feedback.
You on a cell?
Let me go.
You on a cell phone or you on a speaker?
I'm on a cell phone.
Okay, probably getting back. Let me ask you this. We was talking earlier. We were going to get more deeper about something. Now, one of your books that you asked people to read is Stolen Legacy by George G.M. James, which I have, amazing book. I've noticed that a lot of people do not give him the credit for bringing this information out, and he even was killed. And people do not know this. This is information that we sometimes talk about. Back in the day, this was forbidden to talk about. And he's from, I think he's from Arkansas. He gets no play when he is contributing. And I believe, this man was pretty much killed in a reasonable way because of the fact that his throat was slit. Based off him being told not to produce this particular information. I think it's a shame, in my opinion, that we don't give so much honor to these people whose lives are put in jeopardy just to give us this particular information.
You know, brother, that's absolutely correct. Because I know, and I don't really talk about it because it's not part of my conversation with the community. And I'm really not attempting. But what these scholars that go out and do this work have to realize that their life is on the line all the time because there is nothing more dangerous in the world, and in the United States in particular, than an educated African man or woman, particularly an African man who understands his role in society and respects his woman. The same as it relates to Ma'at, as you opened up and you spoke of the seven virtues of Ma'at. A black man, an African man that understands those virtues of harmony and justice and order and reciprocity, understands and can take into his own responsibility to make a difference and to raise a family. And so it becomes very powerful. And Dr. George G.M. James shared information that was invaluable at a time. And although it is unfortunate he never got his just due when he was alive, his work is certainly a seminal work, an important work now. I taught a course on stolen legacy. I taught a college course on stolen legacy.
And,
for many of
the
students, particularly those who were into fraternities, it was a little bit of a challenge to understand stolen legacy. And so they asked me if I would come up and teach a course, and I broke it down chapter by chapter, and I explained it to them, and we did cross-references, and it was quite a great class.
And I know for a fact that you got a couple. This is part of your book list. I hope everybody's writing this down. Number one, he has George James Storler. I don't know why I'm left with it. It's amazing. I got it at very low. And then number two, you got Dr. Van. Now write this down, y'all. My favorite, Dr. Shakespeare, Civilization and Barbarism. Dr. Ngimi, who I had the pleasure of meeting, translated it into English because this was written in France. Then he has Ancient Egypt and Africa and Black Africa. Then you have Dr. Brothers, which is Kemet and African worldview. And then you got Dr. Bereshango. Y'all write this down now. And I'm just going to give the names. If you want this list, everybody, I do have it. And you can get it from me by going to DragonsConnection.com. And I will be able to email you all the list of books he suggested you actually read. Because in order to, and we're going to go into this a little bit, so in order to, I believe, to do this curriculum that you are presenting, it is important for them to have a kind of a base of knowledge. Am I correct? And you suggest that these books would be their main base of getting them what they need.
Those books specifically deal with my curriculum around African cosmology and the Shabaka Stone. When I teach my class on the Shabaka Stone, those are the books I use for the reading materials.
Okay. And I will have all that. If you need it, everybody, please, I suggest you get this, because in order for us to get this to go through, we need your participation. And you may not be able to get all the books, but I gave you the first five, which would probably be the first three, which would probably be your most important to get, if that's the way it's written. And he has DVDs, which I'm going to just go through so everybody can get understand. He has one DVD called The Cosmos, Human Origins, National Geographic, The Real I, The Real Eve, and number four, The Journey of Man. I suggest you go and just get an idea of looking at that. Now, let me ask you, Brother Cobb, in teaching this history, and I know you're a teacher, the powers that be have been teaching what we and you both can consider a fraudulent perspective of history. Most of our history is coming from a particular group. I found out to be the Germans from the Prussian Empire when they first brought their school system over. What we are attempting to do is like reprogram the people that have been learning that and to come into a new stage of learning. What's your view on how this curriculum has been damaging?
Well, when we look at the origins of it, none of the research that went in, see, the ancient Kemetic, even the ancient world, if you want to look at it, even when you look at it from a different perspective, was always based on what was best for the enhancement of the skills of the learner and consciousness of oneself. When we look at the origins of education, it is important for us to understand that the purpose of education in the earlier part was never meant for people. It was meant for the rich, European, land-owning peoples. It wasn't even meant for the peoples of European descent in general. It was meant for a specific group to rule. The information, of course, we could get into what the Moors taught them, because they didn't know this before the Moors. However, what they did was, in the enslavement of African peoples, the idea of enslaving people for economic reasons started to have African people create inventions that lessened the pressure on them to learn or to work. And so in so doing, they created things such as the cotton gin and all the other things that one machine do the work of three Africans for 3 days, which meant that they started to get more raw materials and more products than time allowed. So this was the birth of the Industrial Revolution somewhere around the early part of the 1820s and 30s. What began to happen was they realized, those who were rich, particularly in the North, who were the industrialists, began to realize that there was a problem because there was more supply than demand.
Right.
So that they began to have to consider to stop enslaving African people so that white folk, peoples of European descent, would then compete. Because what was once an agriculturalist society became an industrial society. And so they had to change their format, and so the enslavement of African people became a suffocation of the capitalist system. Because if you could buy an African for $300, and then if you have to pay somebody to work $300 a year, there's a more of a chance that the rich person would buy someone for $300 than to pay a European $300 a year. So they had to abolish slavery. So when they abolished slavery, and all those things occurred, they needed people. There are two things that will fuel an industrial revolution: transportation and communication. So out of transportation, communication, they needed people who were clerks, who were secretaries, not female, but male secretaries. And the thing was to teach how to read, write, and to calculate. It had nothing to do with learning. It had nothing to do with thinking. Commission of 1909, don't believe me, go to any good library and get the Carnegie Commission of 1909, because I ask our community not to believe me. I always ask, the only thing I want to do for us as a people is to make us think.
That's right.
I'm not trying to get people to believe. That's not the point. The truest sense of knowledge, wisdom, and understanding comes from the individual research done in the area. That's when you learn. There is a Morris proverb that says, when you set out to learn something, once you learn it, what you learn you could throw away, because it was the process of learning it, which is the truest sense of education. So that one bottom line was, when the Carnegie Commission came out, that is where they decided that they were going to have a school day from 9 to about 1 or 2 o'clock, that they would have summers off, and it was based on an agricultural model, but it helped the industrial, because they knew they needed people who could read, write, and calculate. School was never meant to teach people how to think or to create consciousness. So what is bad about the system is it's not about learning how to think. It's about becoming paid slaves.
Well, let me ask you this, because, and I agree, but we did something, and I know you're aware of this, they did this a long time ago, right in that same time frame, called scientific management, where they were trying to create us into an industrial mindset, so they just made us like in robot form, and so to speak. You're absolutely correct, so I would validate what you said, because we did a show on that, and you're absolutely correct. But let me, since you brought up the Morris, and this seems to be one of the biggest topics, I had James Trafficking on, who wrote a magnificent speech to the Congress about some of the things that we hear our Morris brothers say today. But at the same time, now, Dr. Clark and Dr. Sertima pretty much stated that they were like the foundations of slavery. And it seems to be overlooked a lot by a lot of our historians as if this is not true. I mean, if they were the foundation of slavery, or the foundation of putting a slave system together with the Gabaldis, the Medovicis, these were all mixed families of the Moors. What is the reason why we continue to, you know, deny that part of history?
Well, I think in continuing the research of the great scholars is that we have to get to the point where we realize that what we call slavery in America was never practiced anywhere in the world. Africans did not have slaves. They had servants, but they didn't have slaves. What happened in America amongst Europeans, when the Moors brought in the social condition of servitude, Europeans had the legal concept of what is called the feudal system, where they had the lords and the serfs. So that when the Moors brought in this social system, what the Europeans did is they superimposed their legal system over a social system. So that Africans' slavery did not exist. There are a number of differences between what we say about what happened in Africa and what happened in America. First of all, in Africa, human beings were always human beings. They were never classified as non-human. It was never a legal system that put a group of people in a category where they would not be considered to be humans. People who were in servitude in Africa could work their way out of servitude, whether they bought themselves out of it or whether they earned their way out of it. they could always get out of it. It wasn't a birth-to-death experience. The other piece is that the children born to those who were in servitude, they were born as considered to be free. They were not in servitude to the people that their parents may have worked for. So the bottom line, there is a great book that's called That Peculiar Institution by Kevin Stamp, S-T-A-M-P-P, that outlines the legal system created around the enslavement of African people, so that while the Moors brought the concept of servitude into Europe, they did not bring in a legal system that would banish a people because of the color of their skin. The other piece was it wasn't a particular culture or color that put you in servitude. It was the condition of your life that put you. So there's a great difference between the two.
I agree, because they were, up until, and I think you would agree, up until the 1700s, Dr. Blumenbeck of Germany came up with that color scheme, because obviously there was no problem with color based on the fact of all the sex that was going on in Europe. I mean, I tell people all the time, I don't see why we're upset, because during that time they had multiple twos of women and babies produced by white women. That's just well known. And so to me...
And that was...
Go ahead.
I follow you. No, man, I'll follow you, brother. You go ahead and finish your thought.
No, I'm saying, it seems to be well known that the sex game was, I mean, having sex with white people wasn't even a problem for the Moors, obviously. So, I mean, it wouldn't be no issue to me that they had no problem with color. A color is a game. And I would think with some of the research that we have, Europe has a connection with India, with the Indo-European, which is that caste system. Basically, what we're talking about is a caste system more so than a race or color issue. Correct or not correct?
Well, it's combined on the two. The caste system is based on your color.
From India?
You see, in India, you know, the darker people that were, I mean, they had a 1,000-year war on the black people of India that we today call Dravidian. And when when the northern Eurasians came down out of the mountains and they were coming in contact with these African peoples, they attempted to totally destroy them and take over their culture. And so that it's a combination of both, the caste system. You know, it's like playing Monopoly. And when you're playing Monopoly, only certain people can play the game. And these people who are playing the game are able to access the game and the money, and they buy up everything. And then all of a sudden down the road after everything is bought up, then they say, okay, I guess we're going to let you all play. But everything's already bought up. So what else is there to buy? They may say we're in the game, but they're running things because they played it only amongst themselves and did not let other people participate.
Right.
And the system is, and the reason why the people were not allowed to play the game was because of the color of their skin. And then from that comes the caste system that says, well, okay, now if you're not of a particular wealth or whatever, you are not part of this. But the caste was built on the complexion, but then all of a sudden became a social stature.
Now I want to ask something because we got you here. I got to ask why I have you, because it ain't often that we get an actual professor, doctor, in history on here. So we take advantage when we can. Over here, a brother came on the show by Dr. David Himmelteb, wrote a great book called "Africans Were Here in America First." Very good book, documented evidence. He always used that term, documented evidence. Being that. That was known, and it's so many, you know, you got the Dogons were already traveling over here and so forth, different. What do you, in terms of this country and way it's set up with different indigenous people, And being that many of the indigenous today that we see do not really recognize their African roots. If you look at some of the tribes, I'm just going to use the ones here, the Mississippi, the Seminole, and the Seminole should never do that, but they do. They seem to exclude the African side of their indigenousness and X them out of some of the casinos. Why did that happen, you think, where we were? It's well known we were here.
Dr. Imhotep's book, The First Americans Were Africans, is one of the finest pieces of documentation I've seen. I've studied that book, and I have spoken to him on several occasions, and we're looking forward to doing a joint presentation in the near future.
That'd be great.
The people that we today call the original people were not the original people.
Right.
The people that we today call the indigenous population are not the original people. I encourage the community to get a book that's entitled The Paleo-American to complement Dr. David Imhotep's book. It's called The Paleo-American, written by Neser, N-E-S-E-R, M, Nehe, N-E-H-E-A. He has done a phenomenal amount of research, and his bibliography is outstanding because, you see, and Dr. Imhotep's book is equally substantiated scientifically in his bibliography and his presentation. You see, one of the things that I deal with as an educator is I don't play around with presenting information to our community if I can't back it up on several different levels. I don't try this to come to the community and speak on an emotional level. Mm-hmm. I believe the scientific method of inquiry is the cornerstone to the emancipation and liberation of black people. Because whether or not you are validated by Europeans or Eurasians makes me no difference at all, because I have done presentations where there have been people of indigenous background there, and they don't care for me. Now, let me tell you something else. I have five nations of indigenous people that run through my veins, Cherokee being one of them. But I'm absolutely ashamed at the way the indigenous people are treating African people. And they don't like me saying that. But I'm going to try to drop it the best way I possibly can. And that is that whenever you have the president of the so-called Cherokee Nation resemble someone like Bill Clinton, I have a problem with that.
Yeah.
And no matter what anybody says, I don't care about this nonsense about, well, I'm indigenous and I got like a course. I'm not interested in that. Bottom line is that when the European first came to this country, he called the people he met the red man and woman. And that when the indigenous people looked at the European that came, they specifically called them the pale face. So there had to have been a stark difference in the complexion of these two people just by the way in which they addressed each other. You don't get red without mixing brown and black with a lighter shade of brown and black.
That's right.
Red is a very dark color. Let's be real about this. And if they call them pale face, and if the president of the Cherokee Nation today stands before us with a pale face, I have a problem with that. That's who you want to guide. And that same pale face is going to tell black folk that we are not accepting you in our nation. I, as a member of the Cherokee Nation, want to let you know I am ashamed to want to be a part of your nation. I don't want to be a part of an indigenous people who are ashamed to embrace themselves. I don't want to be around you. And when you grow up and you're willing to accept who you are, then maybe we can talk. Until that day, I am an African man searching for an educational system that will emancipate and totally liberate our people of African-American descent, including indigenous people who know that they're African. And those that don't know, come to me when you find out.
That's right. Now, let me ask you, since you brought that in, it sounds like we do need a curriculum. So,
yes,
in hearing all that you have, hearing what we've been talking about, tell us how you can bring this curriculum to us, that we as a people, through the technology of the internet, whatever means you need to use, mouth to mouth, ear to ear, however we got to do this. Tell us what you need to get your curriculum and give us a little step-by-step so we can take some questions from these people on the line. There's a lot of them on there. And, you know, tell us what we need to do and how you intend to do this.
Fundamentally, let us be real and let us be sincere. I realize and I am very sensitive to our beloved community. And I realize that there are members of our community, which I would probably say are the majority, who cannot afford to homeschool their children. They cannot afford to send them to private schools, African-centered schools. My recommendation is we need to begin by going to our community centers, to our extended day programs, whether they be martial arts programs, whether they be tutorial programs, church groups, community centers that have after-school programs or extended day programs, and begin a staff development program that allows our children to begin to be introduced to their culture and their curriculum on possibly a two-hour, maybe three-day-a-week program. You might have a Saturday academy. I am being very real. I don't want our people to be overwhelmed. I realize they're not going to leave the public school system right overnight, and they're not going to go into charter schools. They cannot afford things that are being offered. So let's be real. I say the after-school program with proper staff development will start the process. That's not to say that homeschooling is not part of this. I am saying homeschoolers, people who have African-centered schools, I'll be visiting the Los Angeles community in August to do a series of presentations to African-centered independent schools. There is a homeschooling national conference in Atlanta the weekend of the 18th of July, of which I believe Sister Gayle and Keisha, who brought me down to South Florida a few weeks ago, will be going to. In fact, that's where I met Sister Gayle last year, July, when I was there to address the community of homeschoolers. But we need a staff development program. I have dedicated my life, and I am not the only program. I am a program, but not the only one. But I am saying that since you're talking to me, I'm going to tell you what I got. And my concept is that we have to study the brain, my brother. We have to have staff development programs on the brain, to study the different areas of the brain. You cannot teach what you do not know. Where are the learning centers? You have places such as Broca's section, B-R-O-C-A. You have Wernicke's section. One of them deals with the language. The other deals with the comprehension of language. When you're teaching somebody, what you say is very important as it's relating to where it's housed in your brain. And what you say is located in a particular area for the learner to comprehend what you say. And so it's important that when you teach people the importance of what they say and you teach them how it should be comprehended, that should be, for me, at the base of knowledge and wisdom, because how can you teach what you don't know?
Right.
You need to know the parts of the brain. Also, cosmology needs to be taught. Astronomy needs to be taught as it relates to the Shabaka stone that our African ancestors wrote on cosmology, to the pyramid text and the coffin text that our ancestors in Egypt, Kemet, wrote. We need to understand the Dogon. Dr. Fukia, a Congolese brother, has done something on Congolese cosmology. I teach Congolese cosmology. We need to study this. We need to educate our children. We need to have telescopes in every one of our homes. We need to have microscopes in every one of our homes so our children can observe the outer world of the stars and the inner world of atoms. We need to understand melanin. We need staff development on melanin. I developed a biology, chemistry, and physics course on melanin to study biology and not know melanin is equivalent to taking a course in auto mechanics and not know the various parts of what gasoline plays in the car. If you don't know what makes your body run, you may know the parts of your body. You can know the skeletal system, the respiratory system, the reproductive system, just like you may know parts of the car. But if you don't know gasoline makes the car run, what's the use? The car is made to move. The body is made to move. If you don't know melanin, you don't know what makes your body move. You don't know what makes it think. You don't know what makes you see and hear. You don't know what makes your muscles contract, and you don't know what makes your skeletal system be the backbone of your very body. So, and you don't know the melanin in your reproductive system that makes you give birth and also to sire birth. So we need to study melanin. We need to study the Moors. We need to study African methodology. These are the courses that I offer our community. I'm not just talking about the teachers, because our community, we as a people, have not been taught this. So if we as a people don't know this, how can we know what to expect our teachers to teach?
I agree. Because in so many ways, what you just said is because we have been destroyed for lack of knowledge. I don't know why my... Can y'all hear me? Can you hear me good, brother? Because I'm going to be echoing, but I sound like I'm echoing to you. I don't know if it's true. But...
Brother, I can hear you, but I can hear you.
Okay, because I don't know why it's loud. I've got myself on the lowest level. I wanted to say this. It's going to come down to the people who are maybe not even teachers in the school system, because I want y'all to know something about homeschooling that may have not been talked about. In homeschool, unfortunately, the state wants to be involved with it because you must register with the state to homeschool, at least in the state of Florida. Can't speak for no other state right now because I don't know. But for the state of Florida, you must register your child with the state so they won't call your child to be truant. So that's another hassle. And also, you have to have teachers who are committed to coming to you and actually evaluating your children and then taking that evaluation back to the state saying that they found your children fit at the curriculum or the level they should be. That's part of homeschooling. For those of you who already know, those of you who don't know or are considering, you need to know that because you will have to register your children, or however you want to call them. I know some people got a different thing with words, but however you want to register your prodigy, you would have to go through the state. And I don't know how that works up there in New York State. I am originally from New York State, Brother Kawa, from the great city of Buffalo, down the below.
All right.
Yes, yeah, so I got family in New York, mama from Brooklyn, so we were with New York quite aware. But I don't know how New York State, but New York State is very, very, very under control at the moment. And it seems like each state is becoming more and more of control. It probably is the best bet for parents to take advantage of what you said earlier. If your schools, your churches, if you have preachers who are open-minded enough to present this, take advantage of everybody. Take every advantage you can to implement these type of information to the people. Also, I got you. Hopefully, could I have you for another hour? Can I take a few calls? Because there are all you wanted me to ask is quite a question before we go into the next segment with Dr. Kawa. Please hit the number one button. All you on the internet, can't hit nothing. If you're on Skype, I don't use Skype, so don't use it. Strictly the phone for this particular show. Are you up to staying the whole time, brother? So I want to make sure I don't want to take advantage.
Oh, yeah, man. I put the time aside for my family of OE Dry Bones, brother.
That's right. Appreciate it. But so I'm going to give everybody an opportunity. I want you to make your comments brief, questions brief, so we can get more people on the line. That way everybody gets to talk. Let me start with my brother here. Let me start in New York. Let me get 7981. 7981, OE Dry Bones. You got a comment, question, please? 2 minutes. Well, just
okay,
question.
Brother. I've been listening for the last hour. This is Brother Muhammad Ali from Buffalo,
what's up,
New York.
Yes.
Yeah.
What's up, brother? How you been doing? You've been easy, my brother.
I'm fantastic. I'm on vacation. My other brother called and said, you're on vacation. I have no need for you not to listen to the show and call in. So here I am.
There you go.
No, I like everything that the brother said. I'm going to keep my comment brief, like you said. I like what he said. I've been listening to him, and it's fascinating what he said. But he said some things about the Moors that in his second half I would like him to get into a little bit more about that, no pun intended. But I would like him to get into that a little bit further so that I could understand.
And which way? What you want to get into so he get a good idea of what you're specifically talking about? Give him an idea so he knows what you're thinking about.
Well, he talked about indigenous Moors being in America. Unless I heard it wrong, I researched that a lot and I didn't see that.
Okay.
Well, I want to be clear. I didn't say indigenous Moors. I said indigenous peoples in America were African.
And that's
what we call a short-statured people, or the Twa people, or who we call in science the Paleo-American, the first people to be here. The people today that we call the indigenous people are really a fifth migration of people coming to this part of the world a couple of thousand years ago, and we call that the Asian migration. But they are not the original people in America. In fact,
the people
they call indigenous are the ones that either killed off or blended with the original Paleo-American. I don't use the word more because of the nature of what that word may mean. When I deal with Moors, I'm really dealing with those Africans of North Africa and Northwest Africa that went into Europe, give or take, 710, and remained there until 1492. The Moorish concept now, there's another concept of Moor, which deals with Moorish Science Temple, brought about by the great genius, our brother, the Honorable Noble Ju Ali. That's a separate thing. That's not this historical Moor. That is a Moor that came into existence in the 1915s and 16s with Timothy Drew, who became Noble Ju Ali, that revived what is called the Moorish Science Temple of America, of which there are various temples around the country and the world today. Two different things altogether.
Yeah, I would agree. And also the fact that a lot of what we're going to try to get into the next part is the historical data that the Dogons left about some of the things that were taking place in America as well by the Omelet. But the Omelet here, let's go to more of the calls. I'll see you out there. Let me go to, hold a minute, and make a comment so the brother can answer quickly and brief. 8848, OE Dry Bones, 8848, you're on the air.
Good evening, and very interesting, all that you have mentioned, very educative. In reference to our... to our educational system, goodness gracious, is true. It's not something that has our children towards thinking. It's something that's very manipulative towards them being robotic, and it's very dangerous. So I do feel that, yes, that homeschooling is the best way to go. So I thank you for your input.
All right. Thank you, appreciate it. Also, I want to give a shout-out for my brother from Buffalo because he actually went to Egypt, Kemet, with Ashraf Wazi and brought back some magnificent pictures. I had the pleasure of seeing them, and they were very unbelievable. So, yes, it's a lot of knowledge that we have down in the Nile Valley. Let me go to...
And if I may say something real quick, brother, I'll be in the Buffalo community on September 6th. There's a sister, Dr. Eva Doyle, that's going to be bringing me to Buffalo September 6th. So if Brother Ali would like to put the word out there, let folk know I'm on my way to Buffalo September 6th, and I'll be speaking at a museum dedicated to a brother that started the first newspaper that was in Buffalo, or even in the Northeast, Sister Doyle told me. So please be aware of my coming. To the sister that said that about homeschooling, one thing that I really would like to leave with the community, and I'd like to really for it to resonate, I want us to know that it is don't want our community to be overwhelmed with the idea of homeschooling. This can be done. In fact, the first schools ever existed were homeschools.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And to be honest, homeschooling does not mean all of you have to stay home. There's so much, but understand this clearly. When we started homeschool, there was no programs at that time. We winged it. But now, you can homeschool from the computer, everybody. This thing is so advanced now because it's like going to college without going to the building. Unfortunately, I would suggest that we kind of get more hands-on if we're going to find people who can teach the Afrocentric or the African side more so, because you may not get that in conventional homeschooling if you go online. They ain't going to go that deep. So that ain't going to happen. Let me go one more, and then I'm going to get into the brother going to the next segment. But she's been waiting for a long time. In the ATL, we got Atlanta, Georgia, 81877. How you doing?
Hello. Hello, Dry Bones, and hello, brother. This
hello.
Is Akila. I am enjoying the show. Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I do.
I can hear you, my sister.
Okay, great. I just wanted to know if you can, some friends of mine wanted to expand on the 25th Dynasty with and the Chewbacca stone.
Okay. The question as it relates to the 25th Dynasty, when you look at the ancient Kemetic dynastic system, you're looking at a dynasty that is going to be in existence somewhere, give or take some dates. I'm afraid of dates, but I'm just going to throw them out for a point of reference. You're talking about 650 years before the Christian era. That basically is where you're looking at. You are looking at a pharaoh whose name is Kashta, K-A-S-H-T-A. He is the last Nesut. We didn't call them pharaohs. We call them Nesut Piti. N-E-S-U-T or D-I-T-Y, Nesut Piti, the one who's right to rule. And Kashta had, of course, he had sons and daughters, but he had a son by the name of Pianki. When Kashta died in battle, his son Pianki became the Nesut. Pianki was the one that brought in the 25th dynasty. After Pianki came Chewbacca. Chewbacca was his brother, son to Kashta, and brother to Pianki. After Chewbacca came Taharqa. Taharqa was the nephew of Chewbacca and the son of Pianki and the grandson of Kashta. When the Nesut Piti, or the pharaoh, Chewbacca, came into a place geographically that we today call Memphis. It was called Menefer, or what we call Hikupatar.
Yeah, I'm on.
Hello?
Listening to you.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, because there's a call coming in from the number that I dialed you. But okay, so Chewbacca is going to come upon a document. The document is going to be wormy. If you go to Chapter 8 of Dr. George G.M. James's book, Stolen Legacy, I think it's page 139 to 151, he has an essay on the Memphite theology. This is the document that Chewbacca is going to come upon. Chewbacca is going to speak of it, the fact that it was worm-eaten, and because of the value of its information, he was concerned that it would be worm-eaten and no one would ever know it, so he had it rewritten in stone. You know how we get the term written in stone? Well, that's where it comes from.
That's right.
And
right.
The Baca stone is a rewritten version of the Memphite text. Now, to put it in its perspective, if you were to go back as far as when the Memphite text was first written, and when Nesutpeti Shabaka rewrote it, take that time span. Now, let me give you another time span. If you took the time span between when Nesutpeti Shabaka wrote or rewrote the Memphite text and today's date of 2014, more time elapsed between when it was written and when Shabaka rewrote it than when Shabaka rewrote it and today. Shabaka is talking about rewriting the works of his ancestors. He is talking about his ancestors as we talk about Shabaka, our ancestor. Now, let's go to the document. The document is a writing of the origins of the cosmos.
Mm-hmm.
And everything that we teach in astronomy today is written on that stone. In fact, more is written on that stone than what we learn in our classrooms today. Let's break the stone up. The stone is broken up into four sections. There are two horizontal lines, and then there are 60-odd vertical lines. The two horizontal lines describe how Shabaka came upon the document and had his scholars rewrite it. It's more like a history, those two top lines. Then when you get into the vertical lines, they're broken up into three sections, three philosophies. The first philosophy talks about the primate of the essences, or how the universe came into existence from the waters of Nun. The second philosophy is entitled The Essences of Pre-Existing Order and Arrangement. That talks about what came from the Nun, what came from the Atum. The third philosophy deals with the essences of order and arrangement that now are going to bring us down to the planet Earth, and they are going to describe the fact that there is Nut, who is sky, Geb, who is earth. Nut and Geb came from a pair known as Shu and Tefnut, which is Shu is air and Tefnut is moisture.
Mm-hmm.
You have male and female twins. Shu Tefnut give birth to Nut and Geb. In other words, moisture and air give birth sky, or the light and heat energy from the sun. That's why Nut swallows the sun at night and gives birth to it in the day. Nut and Geb give birth to the first forms of organic life, from the protozoa, or the single cell in the water, to the masterpiece, who is the human being. And there's it's a wonderful story of how the universe began to create life and how we came into existence and how we are now to look back on ourselves and to know that we are God having a human experience. That's
right.
What the Shabaka stone teaches us. And in reflection, that's the way the story goes. Now, I can give a whole class, and I have DVDs
on it.
If folks are interested, you can order my DVDs on the Shabaka stone. That's basically a synopsis of the Shabaka stone.
What is the website to reach you, since you shot that out there? What is your website so they can reach you?
My website is www.pantherprince.com. www.pantherprince.com. PRINCE.com. My email, KamenE777@AOL.com. KamenE777@AOL.com. They can, if they go to my website, they can download for free my study guide and other pertinent materials that may be of interest to them.
Good. Now, I like how you got that 777 going on. And you know how we talk, y'all, numerology, that's 21. We'll get into that another time, but it's not that time tonight. Let me go to, I got Fort Lauderdale out here. Let me go to 6244. You want to hear OU Dry Bones? 6244, you're on air.
Hello?
Yes, hello. Go ahead. Make a comment. Ask a question.
Yes, peace.
Go ahead.
Yeah, peace. How you doing? How you doing, family? This is Chauncey, a.k.a. U. Kramer from GMOG Media. How y'all doing?
Peace.
All right.
How you doing,
brother, man? Hey, man, I'm doing excellent, brother. How you doing?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, man. We had an excellent time when you were down here a couple weeks ago at the Mind, Body, Soul venue, as well as the Old Building Museum. The lecture that you guys did was incredible. We really appreciate that. You know, Sister Gael and Sister Keisha, they did a fabulous job doing that. And, you know, what you did, you actually sparked a flame with everybody here when you were down here, because the comment that I recorded from my webpage, gmogmedia.tv, which is called the Q&A segment that I have footage of you on, that particular segment, the first half, a lady asked a question about we were all workshop out, and that actually sparked a community think tank we just did yesterday at Sister Gael's house, where we invited local educators, historians. We invited a brother from the Nation of Islam there, and it was incredible. We had all kinds of people there exchanging information on how to liberate and emancipate our people that are in South Florida. So you sparked a flame, and we're trying to continue these monthly think tanks that we're trying to do in South Florida, which is, you know, led by Sister Gael and Sister Keisha. So we're trying to keep that afloat. And I know you have a million things going on as well, and I believe you're going to be coming back down here for a teacher's workshop as well. Am I correct?
Yes, brother. That's what we've been talking about, August 1st, 2nd,
right.
And 3rd.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And
yes,
that's when we're going to get real deep.
Right.
Absolutely.
You know, we're going to take what we did, and we're going to start to embellish and enhance and begin to really get into the processes and methodologies of teaching.
Right.
Well, definitely. Brother, were you the one recording? You were the one recording this, if I remember.
Yes, yes. Yeah, brother.
Okay.
I believe I saw you, the brother with the dreadlocks, the long dreadlocks, correct?
Right. I've seen the material on there, and I did look at it. It was quite good, very clear. I think that's going to be needed.
Right.
I think think tanks are something that has to be done throughout all the community, because everybody has a different need. Every community is different. Demographics are different. But I think that South Florida has a very unique dynamic, because we have everybody here. And it behooves all of us to get together and take a look at what's going on, especially right here, because it's a whole, I don't know if you got to really see it, Dr. Cabo, but South Florida, Miami, you have to even come to Miami. That's even much different. It's one of those communities that, we have the Haitians, we have Jamaicans, we have the Dominicans. I did a show last week on Latinos, how
right.
Latino people was being discriminated by blacks. You know, we're gonna have to stop and take a look at our history. Is similar, and we all been done the same way. I think many of us don't have an idea about each other's history, and I think that should be brought up, that each one of us, our history is pretty much the same. It's just that different languages barriers have, just, you know, the Haitians are French. Most of the other world is English, and we're from the renegades. I call the criminals of Europe. So basically, We have a lot to do, but I think, and I will say, that that is the way to go, brothers and sisters, up there. And I hope to participate with you guys because we have to sit and formulate. They have think tanks all day long. Let me tell y'all this. Some of the richest groups in America are think tanks. Right. Carnegie, the Carlyle, you name it, the Rockefeller think tank. You name it, they got think tanks, and they have them 24/7, and they had 100-year progressions. So what we're doing now, they have 100-year progression now, so that's why we have to really step the game up. So hey, I appreciate that, brother. So keep yourself open to all of us, and definitely keep the shout-outs so we can find out what's going on. And I'll be more than happy to announce what y'all doing. No problem at all.
Yeah, appreciate that, family. Definitely you can check me out on gmojimedia.tv, and my footage that you can watch is on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/gmojimedia. So appreciate that, family. Looking forward to working with y'all in the near future.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate it. Let me go to one more call, then we're going to start getting to this last segment here. No, you go right ahead. Say what you want, sir.
Brother, I just want to say something about the think tank. Dr. Amos Wilson told me that one of the most important things that we must create is a think tank. I developed a school called the Per-Ankh, P-E-R-A-N-K-H. Two words. It means the temple of life or the house of life, which is a school.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I go around developing. A think tank, you don't join the Per-Ankh. The Per-Ankh joins you.
That's right.
So that a think tank is a place where many different representatives of various organizations come together. They pool their thoughts and their resources together, and they explore ways that they can support each other. So when you talk about those rich people, what they did in their think tanks is that all of the rich groups got together and looked out for their own interests.
That's it.
We need a think tank. We don't need no more. Dr. Clark said there's two things black folk don't need another. They don't need another religion, and they don't need another organization. We need to take what we have and bring it all together. I'm through, brother. I just wanted to make that point about the think tank so that I could take it and discuss my concept of think tank so that folk know what it's like. We bring the Nation of Islam together. We bring the Hebrew Israelites together. We bring those interested in the Democratic Party or whatever party you belong to. We bring them all together, and in the interest, as Malcolm told us, they don't attack you because you're a Baptist or a Catholic or a Democrat or a Republican. They attack you because you're black.
I want everybody to listen carefully to this, what he just said, and I think I brought this up myself a couple of shows ago. When they did the Berlin Conference, white folks was fighting each other. They were having a war. But for the interest of their survival, they went into that Berlin Conference, and they came out and carved up Africa, and then went right back to war. All I'm saying is when we go on these think tanks and we don't all agree on the first day, we may not agree on the second day, let's not all not come back. Let's stay in the trenches just like they did. Go ahead, brother.
No, I just wanted to add something to your concept of the Berlin Conference because it was the carving up of Africa that caused World War I and World War II because Germany and Italy really didn't get any part of Africa. The French, the British, basically got it. The Portuguese, the reason why World War I and World War II happened was because Germany and Italy didn't get. What started World War II was not the assault on people of Jewish faith. What started World War II was that Italians invaded Ethiopia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Mussolini invaded Ethiopia,
and Adolf Hitler was a student of Mussolini. The same day that Mussolini she was arrested is the, in 1923 is the same day they arrested Adolf Hitler. Adolf Hitler learned how to put people into the oven because Mussolini was putting Ethiopians into ovens. While we do, and I believe we should, recognize the atrocities put upon people in Europe by Adolf Hitler, remember, over 15 million Ethiopians were murdered and slaughtered by Mussolini and the Italian fascists.
And so was the De Beer family at the same time. You're absolutely correct. The De Beer family was also doing atrocities. They were getting them diamonds. They've been doing atrocities for quite some time on all continents, unfortunately.
And the first atrocities was what the white man did to the white woman in the caves of Europe.
Yes. Yes. Now, you know what? You brought that up. Now, I've read a book, and a very interesting book. It's called The Harems of the Moors, where the white women were running actually to the Moors based on how they were treated by the white man. Very interesting. They were, it's one of those things where he was so brutal, they started running because they were at least being treated much differently, even though it was, like I say harem, all y'all know I talk about sex. Sex is sex magic, all that encompassing of the life with the Ankh. What do you think about when we talk about some of the atrocities? Slavery is still going on today in Africa, particularly by all factions, Arabs, Christians, Jews. They seem to have this cabal, which I call a cabal, that is organized together in taking over Africa. Do you see it that way or not? Hello? Hello? I don't know what happened to the doctor. I think we lost our brother. Hopefully he'll call back. He has dropped his call. I see it on the thing. I'm going to look for his call in a minute. Oh, there he is.
Hotep, brother,
I
man.
I see you right there.
Hotep,
your call dropped. I did. What you
yeah,
think
brother.
About
yeah,
bring
yeah,
him?
We probably hit a no phone zone.
Yeah. What do you think about the ongoing slavery, or considering what it is, the sale of human beings throughout Africa by the Arabs, the Christians, even Christians, the popes and them are just having their pedophile ring in itself. And of course, these atrocities going on in Africa, all this these killings. Would you consider that a conspiracy on Africa, or just that these are just uncivilized people, as George Bush would call them?
Well, my bottom line is it is an unfortunate state of events for however it may be happening, and part of it is the remnants of a very development. I don't blame anybody but those who are the culprits behind it. But I also look to us here in the United States of America that by matter of degree, there are times when we treat each other this way. It may not be brutal atrocities, but we certainly are disrespecting each other and we are not doing the work that needs to be done. And I believe that those of us here in this part of the world show by example. And I believe that once we get ourselves together, we then will be an example for other parts of the world, and we then will have more of a say. Little by little, we are doing great things, whether it's those of us who are returning to the continent and building schools and developing different types of contributions that are positive for the African community, to have their saints and their sinners. And so it's important that we honestly look to what's going on and don't try to sugarcoat or to blame it on this or blame it on that. We have got to change our ways, but we must take responsibility. And I think that I am through blaming peoples of European descent for the position I find myself in. Make it clear, I know what they did. I know their responsibility, and I know the role they have played in the destabilization of the African family, the African male and female, and what they continue to do institutionally. But that's not what I'm working by. I am working by the fact that if you blame somebody else for the position that you find yourself in, you give them the power to get you out of that position, but you also give them the power to keep you in. Once we take full responsibility, see, my mathematics in algebra tells me that when you want to solve a problem, only the variables in your formula will solve that problem. If we keep European or Eurasian in the formula to solve our problem, we will always have to depend on solving their problem to solve our problem. Once they are no longer variables in our formula, do not have anything to do with the work that we have to do. So that when I'm around peoples of other cultures who mean to do us harm, and I am not blaming them for what they did or what they are doing to us, I give them the right to shut their mouth. You have nothing to say. I do what is necessary because I'm responsible for this. Not you. I'm responsible for this. And what's funny is that they always try to put themselves in the formula, because even if it's negative, being in the formula gives them a place in our lives. We must be about us and emancipating and liberating our minds. So we have to take responsibility for what's going on and what's happening in the continent, whether it is in the West or the North or the South, wherever it may be. If you are doing things in to the human family, you ought to be held accountable for your attitude. I don't want to hear no blaming and reasons and excuses. There is no excuse for the inhumanity to humanity. So we must take that responsibility. So we must start, as Michael Jackson taught us, we must start with the man in the mirror.
Okay. Y'all heard that. Now, I'm telling you, I heard us. Don't tell me I ain't heard it say that on the radio. I said it starts with us. It starts with us.
It
you
starts
mentioned
with us,
something.
Brother. I'll bring you all the way. It starts with us.
And
that's why I spent my life developing a curriculum and not trying to wear down the energy of the Board of Ed. I'm through with the Boards of Education. I'm not interested in what they want. I don't want to work with them anymore. I'll work with them if they ask me to come. I'll do my best, because there are people in Boards of Education around the country that want to do something, but I'm not seeking them out. I'm not going to use my energy on. That's why I developed our own curriculum, utilizing the work of our own people. Our people validated it. Dr. Clark said, go with it. Dr. Ben said, go with it. Asa Hilliard said, go with it. Go on with it. I'm not asking for validation of anybody else but our people. I'm presenting it for our people, by our people, and to our people. And if anybody got a problem with that, it's personal.
Yes, right. Now, let me ask you, you just finished, they had the screening here on the 26th of Hidden Colors 3. Unfortunately, I didn't get to see it because they had it at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Y'all might need to do that again, everybody. Y'all listen to me, Gaya and Keisha. Let's try to get it at a good time. But you were part of that with some great individuals who I had some of the time meeting. Shahzada Hard Ali is already the lover. In making that, in this particular one, I think was based off the attack of race, on racism. Did y'all all get together, or this was done segment by segments where y'all never met? Did you all meet?
Brother, everybody did it independently. That's why the editing job was superb. They flew me out to Los Angeles. Phil Valentine was flown out to Los Angeles. Joy Degree was filmed in Oregon. Sister Dr. Frances Cress Welsing was D.C. I'm sure that Umar, I believe, I'm not sure where he filmed his, but none of us were together. But when you look at Hidden Colors 3, it seems like we were all in the same room vibing off of what all were saying. Let me tell you something else.
Right.
It is now recorded on Amazon that Hidden Colors 3 is the number one historical documentary sold this year And it's not even out yet. It won't be out till July 4th. But there is such a pre-order demand for Hidden Colors 3. It has already overlapped everything on the History Channel, everything that's been done as a documentary, everything that's been done as history. That has been the success of our brother Tariq Nasheed and his staff that has put this dynamic series together. It is number one on Amazon. And they haven't even sent one DVD out. It's number one in pre-order.
And I've seen both one and two. And like I say, for a lot of the history, many of you who have not seen it, one or two, please go get one or two. That way you get an understanding of where it's going, why he's mentioning some of the things he's mentioning. Let me ask you, you have Francis Quest, you have Paul Mooney. You got different perspectives in all this. You mentioned that earlier when you were up there, that some of the things that some of our contemporaries, your contemporaries, and even my, I was born in 62, so these contemporaries, when we listen to them, some are bitter and some are not. You know, you have to take the good with the bad with some of what's being said. And what you are seeing as far as this global attack, of which we many call the New World Order, you've been on Saranetta TV and all that debating that goes on in New York. What's your take on what's the flavor of really going on with the people as a whole, especially when different factions are arguing about, you know, I've watched you on there. You were kind of quiet. I give you credit. I think you're coming back to a debate up there. I'm not mistaken. You, Ray Hagan, and a whole bunch of you guys are going to be up there. That's this next month?
No. The Elders Speak was April 13th. And that had the great Dr. Rosalind Jeffries, Queen Afua, Dr. Ray Hagan, our brilliant brother, Professor James Smalls, and myself. Then the debate occurred between Brother Polite and Brother Dr. Aleem Bey. I'm sorry, Aleem Muhammad. And
right.
I was asked to be a part of it, and I moderated it. Now, I want to explain why it was so important.
Yeah.
I am considered an elder in the community and concerned about the debate. And I understand that. And I understand what's being said. And there were some people who wondered why I was a part of this. But you see, brother, I love our people unconditionally. No matter where you are in the spectrum of your life, I respect and I honor you. For a person of African descent to even be alive, I got nothing but respect and love for you. So that we have a choice as elders. If we have a challenge with the debates, it is our responsibility to put ourselves in a position where we reach out to our younger brothers and sisters and attempt to, through this process. I equate it like if you're in a house where the children are acting unruly, and you as the adult are going to say, oh, well, I'm going to leave the house. I don't want no part of this. And you let the children run amok, then it's not the children's fault. It's the adult's fault for not taking ownership to be able to control what's going on. And so my role was to be with our young people, and many of the responses I got from people after, see, I don't call it a debate. I call it a search for ma'at. You have every right to have your opinion. And as
that's
I
right.
told the audience listening, is that Dr. Ali is not going to win this debate, and Brother Polite is not going to win this debate. The real winners is us, who are going to have the advantage of hearing two geniuses presenting information from two opposite ends. And we ought to take the best from Dr. Ali and the best from Brother Polite and put it together in our own way so that we walk out of the National Black Theater all the better for having had been exposed to two sides. And
man,
it's important that we
now go ahead. I was gonna say, but keep in. I was gonna say you got a what they call a humble role. You, if you wasn't in the conscious state, you know you could have been a politician, but you got me saying, yeah, you are very good. You're right. That we were the winners. We were the winners.
No doubt, brother. No doubt. You know, I mean, and the responses that I got from the community came from young people as well as middle-aged to elder, and they were so happy that I was there because my presence in that room assisted the younger people to be able to develop. Now, not just myself, African Bambaataa was there.
Yeah.
And so the two of us as elders let the young people know, look, we're with you. We respect you. We honor you. And we realize that the elders have not always been in place to be there for you. But we can't change the past. But we certainly can do something about the present to project ourselves into the future.
And I agree with that because, you know, I do a lot of research and I tell people, you know, we get the sand call for you can't, you got to know your past and know your present. And I think in these think tanks, you tell me what you think about this, I think we do have to analyze some of our past strategies. You know, did the civil rights movement really work? Should we keep on that path, or should we take it into another dimension where it seems to be more beneficial? I mean, that's what a think tank does. It breaks down what was the common, and we see what we can do to make it better. In your thinking, and what you know, do you believe that some of these past strategies were very successful, or, I mean, or they may be buffers to make us believe we got further? I mean, you know, economically, according to Claude Anderson, you know who he is. He said we're almost finished. And, you know, in so many ways, you know, you have to look at it and, are we? Or is it that we're just not awake to putting that power of money or circulation of money back into what we had before segregation? It seems like segregation made us get away from the circulation of money in the community. And now that we segregated, we don't seem to put it back in. What's your take on that?
Well, I have the utmost respect for my brother, Dr. Claude Anderson. His concepts in powernomics are very powerful, and the same as it relates to George Frazier. Great deal of respect for all the work that they do, and I study their work frequently. My view is a little bit different because I have absolute and utter regard for the human spirit. And I know that this ain't over until we win. I believe mm-hmm. that everything we have done, there are people who speak of the board, Brown versus the Board of Education decision. I did a presentation this past Friday on the Brown versus Board of Education decision. There's a brother by the name of Floyd Johnson whose family is from Topeka, Kansas, and he sent me a great deal of work from the transcript of the trial to PhD dissertations on the result of the trial. And my take on this, the sense out of the nonsense and keep on moving. There were parts of the civil rights struggle that were phenomenal. Take those
mm-hmm.
and apply that to today. There were concepts as it relates to whether we talk of Malcolm or Marcus Garvey or W.E.B. Du Bois. Or let's get personal, even myself. I am not absolutely accurate in everything that I do. That's why I tell people don't believe me. Think for yourself. Take the best of what everybody brings to the table. Put it all together. That's what think tanks are about. This is why if you bring members of the civil rights movement there who will analyze what they did and how they did it, or people who are aware of them, what was the best in Malcolm? What was the best in Martin Luther King? What was the best in Marcus Garvey?
Right.
What was the best in Freddie Lou Hamer? What was the best in John Henry Clark? What was the best? And don't be afraid to go into other cultures, because they taught us something too. What was the best
that
the KKK taught? The KKK taught us a lot. We might not like what they did, but they certainly taught us things as they conducted themselves in a most rancid way. But we had something to learn. So don't be afraid to talk and learn about what other people have done. Everything. Put it together and move with a new paradigm. And that's why everybody needs to be at the table. Although they may disagree, they don't have to be disagreeable. And we can have unity without uniformity. Everything has its place as we move forward. Nothing should be left out. Nothing should be disregarded, because everything had its place with us. We have to become a thinking people instead of an emotional people. We spend too much time in our emotions. We spend too much of our time into this.
We're glad to come to dealing with drawing, with the city, back and forth when that process gets started. We want to get that process established. But before we get it started, I see you guys have to really pretty much get to that point. You know?
Ah. 13 minutes. You there?
Yeah, brother, I'm here. I finished what I said. I was waiting for the next move. Sort of kind of going in and out, my brother. I'm not hearing what you're saying. Yeah, man, there's some bad feedback on here, brother. Hello?
Is the host still there?
Okay, now I heard somebody.
Can you hear me, Brother Kama?
Yes, am I speaking to Sister Akila?
Yes, hi, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing good, my sister. It was kind of, I lost track of, I guess, brother out of Los Angeles.
Miami. Listen here, I have another question for you. I have another question until our dry bones come back on. Some friends of mine, I also was not able to see Hidden College 3. And the question was, they said that they love the work, but they wanted to know how do you feel about this work focusing on American slavery. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, my sister. I hear the other in the background, but I can hear you.
Okay. Yeah, he wanted to know that him and his family went to support Hidden Fathers, and they enjoyed it, and they just wanted your feedback on how do you feel about the American slavery kidnapping being the last trilogy in regards to psychology that comes last.
Marie, you have a bad testimony for DJ Stuffer.
I'm sorry.
My sister, I'm not quite sure of the question. Can you ask the question again?
Okay. Yeah. What he was wanting to know from your standpoint, I guess, he says that the Hidden Colors 3 was focusing more on American slavery and kidnapping. And he's saying that was the last movie, documentary, he's thinking that perhaps that particular documentary should have came first in the, you know.
Well, you know, I think that the Hidden Colors series has grown, and it has developed over time. And it's really hard to think in terms of how to put it in its proper order, because once you see them all, you can put them in their own proper order. That's why I developed the study guide on Hidden Colors, 1 and 2 in particular, because I realized that there is a consistent way to study it. So that, I mean, it all has its place. It came as it did. Tariq grew with it, and now we have Hidden Colors 3, the Rules of Reason.
I don't know what's going on. I think we're having some kind of technical problems.
I'm still here, my sister.
Okay. On your website, can you tell us a little information that so the listeners can find on your website? Are there any books or any programs that some of the listeners that might want to homeschool their children?
Well, if they should go to my study guide on my website, the same study guide that I sent you, that if they were to my website, they would get a sense of how I approach the study of our history. So I recommend that they download.
Let them finish, because obviously they took us off the air.
Well, you're on the air. You're on the air right now. I just merged you in, so you're on the air now. The listeners are able to hear you. And he was going on telling us about his website. And
okay, go ahead. Let him tell you. Continue on, brother, because we only have 6 minutes left. So continue to tell everybody how they can reach you and what you have coming, so we can keep in touch with you.
Okay, I strongly recommend that the family reach out on my website. You can download my study guide. I have some other written material that would be of interest to you. You can get that free. You can also, in my study guide, it has my list of DVD catalogs, and my address is www.pantherprince.com. You can email me at kamene777@aol.com.
Thank you, bro. Again, everybody, we will be having all this tomorrow up. You can go to the website, www.drybonesconnection. Give us the email address that you want. It's on the right-hand side. And we'll be able to email you all the documents that he has given. And believe me, you would not be sad about it, because I read about two pages of some of it, and believe me, these are recommended books. Brother, I thank you, because I'm not on the air on my normal. They had somehow a zap came. We're having technical difficulties. We have a lot of rain down here in South Florida, so it is lightning. We seem to have a problem. But can you please keep in touch with us? And I will definitely keep in touch with you. Even if you're doing something somewhere else, give us the information. We'll be more than glad to keep up with you and what you're doing. And that way we can say we made another connection on the Dry Bones Connection.
There's no question about that, brother. I look forward to the future. I thank you for giving me this opportunity. And I really appreciate the work that you are doing and the work that Sister Akilah is doing. And I noticed Sister Akilah is interested in cosmology and soul science, and I look forward to developing and sharing information with my sister and with the family.
Thank you, sister. And you'll be in South Florida. Everybody, I know Keisha and them on the air as well. I see 954. He will be here. So, everybody, is there a charge for this, or how does this work? I don't know, but you can give us the information, or they can give it to us. You haven't decided on what y'all plan to do, or is there going to be the same price or more?
Well, I strongly recommend that you reach out to the organization, because I am not familiar with how they'd like to do it.
Okay.
I recommend that if you can give them the contact information. But I just also want the community to know that if you should participate in this 3-day workshop series, you will walk away with a strong knowledge of how we can begin to implement, even if it's parents in the home with their children, how you can begin to teach your child their culture and their identity.
Thank you, brother. All right. That's it, brother and sisters out there listening. I thank you for another Monday night of OU Dry Bones. I look forward to you on Wednesday night. We'll be on our next show at 9 o'clock. We'll have some more information. It'll be a time for everybody to give your comments and, or information that you might know to help each other. We need to unify some form of fashion, and I agree with everybody. This is our time. So for the Dry Bones Connection and from OU Dry Bones, good night, everybody. And to Brother Copper, may you persevere, brother. We are on the wings of my eye.
Thank brother, you, Brother Cabo.
Together we're going to make it up. Hotep, my sister Keela, it ain't over till we win.